Okay, so you know, as a law student, you're always juggling like a million things, right? But one thing you definitely need to wrap your head around is attorney-client privilege. So to help with that, we're going to take a deep dive into a case that's kind of a cornerstone for this whole issue. It's United States v. Hodgins-Zweig.
Yeah, from 1977,
Yeah.
Ninth Circuit. Huge case.
It's like a classic example of when and how that privilege can be like, well, I'm not absolute, you know, there are exceptions. And the case itself, it's almost like a movie plot, right? It involves the IRS and investigation into some possible tax evasion and then this whole drug conspiracy. So like right off the bat, you see how high the stakes can be.
Absolutely. And it really highlights that tension you always have in law.
Yeah.
Like, you have to protect those communications between lawyer and client. That's fundamental. But then you also can't let that protection be used to cover up crimes.
Exactly. So in this deep dive, we're going to break down this whole Hodgins-Zweig decision. Like, what are the core principles of attorney-client privilege, and how does this whole crime fraud exception work? You've got the court's opinion, a legal brief, and your notes.
Yep.
So we're ready to go, I think.
Let's do it.
Okay. So to really grasp this case, we've got to start with the background, right?
Right. So the IRS. They were looking into this guy, Joe Sandino's taxes. At the same time, a grand jury was investigating a suspected drug conspiracy, and Sandino was like a major figure in that, along with a couple of other guys, Joseph and Purdy.
So you have these two investigations running parallel, one financial, one criminal. Then the IRS, they issue a summons to Sandino's law firm, Hodge and Zweig. And they weren't just asking about Sandino's own legal fees. They wanted to know about fees he paid on behalf of Joseph and Curry, too.
Yeah, and that's where the attorney-client privilege issue just explodes, right?
Yeah.
Like, Hodgins-Zweig obviously claimed privilege, arguing these financial records were tied to confidential client communications. They even brought up the Fifth Amendment.
Oh, wow. So they were worried that disclosing this stuff could incriminate their clients or even themselves.
Exactly.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Sandino and his associates, they plead guilty to the drug charges. But even after that, the IRS, they're still after those fee records. Why?
That's the key point. The court recognized that the IRS's tax investigation was totally separate from the criminal case. So even with the guilty pleas, there was still this issue of potential tax liabilities from those drug activities. So the IRS's interest in those fees, it was still totally valid.
So basically, the IRS was like, okay, you're guilty of the drug stuff, but now let's see if you paid your taxes on those drug profits.
Right.
That makes sense. So then, what were like the main legal questions the Ninth Circuit had to tackle?
They had a few. First, did attorney-client privilege even apply to things like client names and fee arrangements in this situation? Second, did that crime fraud exception kick in here?
Yeah.
And finally, were the lawyer's Fifth Amendment concerns legit?
Gotcha. So the court had to really unpack all of that. So let's start with like the basics. What is attorney-client privilege?
It's super important. It's meant to ensure that a client can be completely open and honest with their lawyer, right? To communicate freely without worrying that what they say will be used against them. That way, the lawyer can give them the best possible advice.
Right, so it's like a safe space for communication. But in Hodgins' way, the court clarified that not everything falls under that umbrella. Typically, client names and fees, they're not considered privilege. Why is that?
It's kind of practical. Knowing who hired a lawyer and how much they paid doesn't usually reveal the actual legal advice that was given. Like, it's more of a business transaction than a super secret legal strategy.
Okay, that makes sense. But then we have this whole crime fraud exception. What triggers that, and how did the court apply it in this case?
The crime fraud exception, it's there to stop people from using attorney-client privilege to hide ongoing or planned criminal activity. Like, if someone goes to a lawyer to help them commit a crime or fraud, those conversations aren't protected. The court's not going to let you use legal advice to break the law.
So how does a court actually figure out if this exception should be used? They don't just take the government's word for it, do they?
No, they need proof.
Yeah.
The government has to present a prima facie case of criminal intent. That means enough evidence to create a reasonable belief that the client was seeking legal help to commit a crime. It's a lower standard than proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, but it's more than just a hunch. And in Hodgins-Zweig, the court said, yeah, the government did meet that standard.
What was the evidence that convinced them? How do they connect those legal fees to the drug conspiracy?
The details of the indictment were crucial. It claimed that part of the conspiracy agreement was to provide bail and legal help for anyone in the group who got arrested. The court saw those fee payments by Sandino, especially those for Joseph and Purdy, not just as random expenses, but as fulfilling a part of their criminal agreement.
So it was like built into their whole plan for the drug operation.
Yeah, exactly. That agreement to provide legal support turned those payments from a private thing into a possible piece of the criminal enterprise. And that's a crucial difference. Like getting legal advice after you've done something illegal to figure out your options, that's usually protected. But using a lawyer to help you commit the crime in the first place, that's when the crime fraud exception kicks in.
That's really important to remember. Now, what about those Fifth Amendment arguments from Hodge and Zweig? They were worried about disclosing information that could incriminate their clients and maybe even themselves. What did the court say about that?
Well, about the client's Fifth Amendment rights, the court pointed out that Sandino, Joseph, and Purdy had already pleaded guilty. So the risk of them incriminating themselves further by releasing fee info was pretty low. Once you're convicted or you've pleaded guilty, your protection against self-incrimination kind of loses its punch for that crime.
And what about the attorney's own Fifth Amendment rights? Could they have refused to hand over the records to protect themselves?
The court didn't buy that argument. They said that just giving basic fee info in this specific situation didn't put the attorneys at any real risk of self-incrimination. They weren't being asked to confess to their own crimes or reveal privileged client conversations, just to provide financial records.
There was also that subtle argument about whether the IRS summons was even legitimate. Like Hodge and Zweig hinted that maybe the IRS was trying to use their power to collect evidence for the grand jury's criminal investigation, which wouldn't be allowed.
Right, that's a common issue when tax investigations and criminal investigations overlap. The IRS can't use their civil summons power just to gather evidence for a criminal case. But the court said the IRS has a totally valid reason to look into potential tax liabilities, even if they're connected to a crime. As long as the summons was issued in good faith for a legit tax purpose, which it seemed to be here, it would be enforced. It was up to Hodge and Zweig to prove that the IRS's only goal was to go around the grand jury process, and they couldn't do that.
So the Ninth Circuit ultimately sided with the IRS and said Hodge and Zweig had to give up those fee records. What are the main takeaways from Hodge and Zweig that law students should remember?
The biggest thing is how the court balanced these competing interests. They reaffirmed how important attorney-client privilege is for the legal system to work, but they also made it clear that it's not unlimited. There are exceptions, and the crime fraud exception is a big one.
Yeah, and our notes highlight that this exception can apply even if the lawyer has no clue about the client's illegal plans. That's pretty serious, and it emphasizes how important ethics are for lawyers.
It really does. Lawyers have to be careful and think about the context of what their client is asking them to do.
Right.
It's not just about following orders, it's about using good judgment. And Hodge and Zweig shows that even basic stuff like client names and fees can be scrutinized if there's a chance the crime fraud exception applies. For future lawyers, it's super important to get this, especially when it comes to government investigations. Knowing who paid who and why can be crucial.
This case is a perfect example of how courts try to protect confidential legal advice while also upholding the public interest in investigating and prosecuting crime. It's a tough line to walk.
Definitely. It shows that attorney-client privilege is a cornerstone of our legal system, but it's not a blank check for people who want to use legal services to cover up wrongdoing.
It really makes you think, like, what if the evidence the IRS presented to show that crime fraud thing was weaker or less clear? Would the court have still applied the exception?
That's a great question. If the connection between the fee payments and the supposed criminal agreement had been less obvious, or if the government's evidence of criminal intent wasn't so strong, the court probably would have been a lot less likely to use the crime fraud exception. The government really has to meet that prima facie standard, and that shows how important the specifics of each case are.
It just goes to show that attorney-client privilege is essential, but it has its limits. It's not a magical shield for people trying to use lawyers to get away with crimes. As you all move forward in your legal careers, you'll have to deal with tough ethical situations, and you'll need to know cases like United States v. Hodge and Zweig inside and out. Remember, protecting confidential conversations is important, but so is making sure those protections aren't used to help people do illegal things.
Well said.
All right, that was a great deep dive. Thanks.
My pleasure.
I'll talk to you later.
See ya.